You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, I have the double-headed Dream Team edition with Viv Govender from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg and David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities from the same city. Now, David, I'm going to read you a headline. It says the following, the rush to havens. That's the third one I was going to read to you, but I'll go on with the first bit. It says here, the global sell-off in stocks that began on Wall Street yesterday gathered pace on Thursday as investors pulled back on the artificial intelligence frenzy. And then it goes on to talk about other things like the general Magnificent Seven and also car manufacturers and luxury goods. What do you make of it? It's just a natural pullback, surely.
That's all. Mm. You know, it's, Lindsay, after any run like we've had, or we had in the market where the S&P was up 18% and you had incredible gains in tech, there's a need or there's a want to take profit. And you will look for any excuse to take profit. You know, you will look around because you want to bank profits. You feel it'll give you some sign of security. So you will make up anything. When I say make up, some small incident will happen that triggers it. And what gives you that idea, and why do I say that, Lindsay, just bear with me for a sec, is that if something is wrong, okay, you know, if there's something wrong, Tesla comes out, doesn't meet expectation, trapdoor opens, the stock drops, boom, you don't even get a chance to get out, you know, it just snaps, like the gap, you call it gap or whatever it is, but it goes down. This kind of move we've seen has kind of almost one person selling, another one saying we've got to. It's almost rolling, you know, it's snowballing. And I watched yesterday because it was apparently Alphabet's numbers that disappointed. And I could find nothing in the numbers that disappointed. I mean, if you, you know, the kind of revenues that they made. And then I watched the whole night as the shares just dropped, you know, one seller, another seller, another seller. So it kind of gathered momentum. There wasn't a massive rush. It was just building on it. And the same thing's happening now. It's, you know, it's not a rush out of these stocks. It's a very controlled, movement. And you've got to wait for it to play its course. There's nothing wrong with the underlying businesses in the tech sector. So, you know, if this steamroller is coming, even if it's slow, I'm just jumping out the way. You know, I'm not going to try and stop it. I just let it run. And it's happened in markets.
And what about luxury goods? Because that's got some sort of implication about spending. Now, people say, oh, well, people haven't got the money to spend. But people that don't have money to spend are not buying Gucci bags. So this is just a poor quarter
they've had. It's China. You know, it's the Chinese economy is decelerating, if anything. And if you analyze the numbers, it's all coming from that area. Look, in Gucci's point of view and carrying it, it's bad management, you know, whereas, but with LVMH and the other good luxury businesses, I think this is just the Chinese sales have come under severe pressure. You know, that would affect L'Oreal and other businesses like that. And that's a concern. That's something we can discuss. You know, there are issues in the world economy that are worrying, you know, that are worrying investors. But I don't think it's tech earnings.
Okay, Viv, your take on the recent mini sell-off. I mean, okay, the S&P is 200 points off its highs of a week or 10 days ago, whenever it was. But as David and I just postulated, we said it's just a natural reaction to a market that was slightly overheated in thin times.
Oh, yes, most certainly. But I mean, if you just look at the S&P 500, as you said, off its highs, but you know, it's not exactly like it's been a terrible year to date for the S&P. It's still up 14.5%, almost 15% at the moment, and we are halfway through the year. I mean, it's already beaten the yearly return by about 50%. You know, the average yearly return by 50% in the last, say, 7 months. It's been a very, very strong year. I know people are always, you know, anticipating ever accelerating markets, like ever accelerating tech gains. But, you know, even if the market basically fell another, say, 3-4% from here, it would still be an above average year for the S&P 500. But regarding the tech stocks, as David said, I think the market was just anticipating, or not anticipating, but looking forward to any reason to pull back. I think Tesla's numbers were slightly concerning, but if you look at Ford's numbers, they were also not that great as well. They were also down 10% plus after market. So it indicates that there's still issues in the car sector in the US. But I think with Tesla, that was interesting was that revenue was up above expectations. And with regards to, you know, Alphabet, there were issues with like, with the YouTube. I think there's a couple of things there, but I mean, YouTube is an incredible business. Just on a revenue basis, YouTube, you know, outstrips like a Netflix. It's a really wonderful business, but it just maybe didn't grow as much as we anticipated. And, the overall market, the search market, it's amazing that, you know, they can still do growth when they have 90% of the market. It's not exactly they're taking market share away from anybody else because they're just so, you know, strong. And the fact is that, you know, about a year ago, remember Satya Nadella saying they want to make Google dance? Well, it appears they haven't really maybe danced a lot because they are still growing despite the, you know, in terms of Bing's, you know, AI components, etc.
Okay, and staying with you, Viv, on this one, because David mentioned China. It's all about China, and China rich are not buying Gucci bags and whatever else that they should be buying or have been buying. The People's Bank of China came out with a surprise announcement this morning, which sort of sideswiped the market a little bit with this injection of liquidity, which is good, I suppose, in the medium term. But in the short term, people said, well, they must know something that we don't.
Yeah, this rate cut they've done, I mean, there's been a couple of surprises recently. And the fact of the matter is that I think that there is weakness in China that we are not really seeing the issues in. Remember, the property market in China has been just totally distorted. I think it was like accounting at one point in time for like over two-thirds of all personal wealth. A third of their GDP was the property sector. Recently, there's been a couple of guys executed in the middle like level, kind of like vice mayors of cities executed for corruption in the property sector. But I do think that if you look at the demographics of the country, aging population, declining population, you know, lots of these places where people have built ghost cities, the anticipation that's where they're going to be retiring, or at least not retiring to, but rather that's going to be their retirement income coming from those cities or those apartments, etc. There's a lot of internal issues in China that they need to really figure a way out of. And so I do think that, you know, that's going to be a problem going forward. Another thing I do have to worry about when it comes to these luxury goods makers, I mean, luxury goods, LVMH, a lot of the value comes from the fact that you think it's valuable. You know what I mean? Just how long Europe can maintain this kind of like, you know, kind of like a monopoly on luxury goods when so much of it is just due to perception. I don't know if that can be done, you know. And China's going to be like 50 years' time still thinking that the best luxury stuff comes from Japan, from France. I don't know if that's a case that you can make long-term.
Okay, but it's got legacy, you know, it's got history. David, you go on to luxury goods because you're the expert on these things, yeah. Not because you buy them, but because you invest in them.
I watch them carefully in that because I don't buy them, but I watch tastes. And Viv, it comes down to the designers. It comes down to how you manage those brands. And for the meantime, Bernard Arnault is untouchable in that respect. You know, how he's managed to build this incredible business is, you know, is something to behold, and it's something to admire. Can he keep doing it? We don't know. You know, that's why I'm saying you're dead right. You've got to maintain it. As long as you know, you've got to watch. What I enjoy doing whenever I go either to Australia, to America, or wherever, or Boston, I go into the stores and I go into where they sell the products. You know, and I ask the people around what's happening, who, and they'll tell you, you know, what's what people are buying, how they're queuing up, and what's the word, fashionable.
Yes.
And it's very interesting to monitor. For the meantime, LVMH still has a very strong name in the aspirational area. You know, it's not like Hermes or Hermes. I think it's slightly below there in terms of where it is in luxury. But I watch that with the same thing with Ferrari. When they haven't got a waiting order or a waiting list, then I'm going to get worried. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think China's the big one, eh? China is the big issue. That's the worry. That the tourists are not coming, and you know, that the tourists are not coming, and that they're not spending there as well. That they're saving, which gives you a concern about the decelerating purchasing power of the Chinese consumer.
Viv, you were trying to make a point.
Sorry,
let's make a point. Like, I mean, the example I'd use is like fur coats. Fur coats, 50s, you know. exceptionally, like, this is what every, like, you know, girl wanted. This is what, like, the aspirational thing, get a fur coat kind of thing. By the 80s, the desire for fur coats had disappeared because it was like a cultural taste shift. At the moment, I think the Chinese are newly rich. They basically started getting wealthy about 30 years ago. And then they looked around the world and said, what's the luxury stuff in the world? And it was European, you know what I mean? I don't know if that same cultural kind of cachet for Europe holds for decades going forward. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, yeah, are the Chinese still going to be thinking, oh, the best stuff in the world comes from France and the French stuff is the best, as opposed to the local Chinese designers, the local Chinese producers? Are they going to have a Chinese fashion week that's going to rival Paris Fashion Week, just like the Americans have now? Like New York Fashion Week is, like, I think, you know, rivals what happens in Europe easily. And the New York designers are, you know, getting as much play as what's happening overseas. So that's the kind of thing I'm putting out there. And I do think that's something that can change very quickly when it comes to these tastes. I personally have no taste myself, so I don't know. I can't make a comment on it.
Nonsense, Viv.
You're making a very strong point. These brands don't last forever, and you've got to watch it very carefully. You know, you've got to monitor it. It's not they have you ever seen what's inside of an LVMH bag? It's plastic. I know someone's going to kill me, but I mean, it looks like plastic. There's nothing there. It is leather. Of course it's leather and that. But I mean, at the end of the day, this is what they desire. Go look at the Birkin bag, which is from Hermes, and you know, you've got to line up to get it. You've got to know someone to get it. I mean, it's quite remarkable that this is the mindset of that consumer, and you accept it. You just play it. And the margins are massive, man.
The margins are obscene, actually, David. And the whole point about the French brand being France as a brand, you'll see tomorrow night when you watch the opening ceremony of the Olympics, how stylishly they do things. And they've built an Olympic village in Paris, obviously, for the athletes. And they're not serving fish and chips like the London Olympics did. They've got Michelin-starred chefs cooking all the meals for them. Healthy meals, delicious meals, meals that you would pay €100 for. The French are incredible when it comes to that. Yeah. They are super stylish. If you walk around Montmartre, which I do occasionally when I pop there, and it's just, there's something different. You see a woman walking down the street and you almost sort of stop and say, goodness me, what are you, a model or something? The way they dress and everything. So there's a cachet about France, about Paris. And that's not going to evaporate too soon. Although I will say that when it comes to LVMH, Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy, if you, Moët et Chandon is, it's a fine sparkling wine, but if you just go down the road to Bourgogne and you buy a wine called Crémant de Bourgogne, which is preeminent in that area, it's a sparkling wine, the same as the champagne sparkling wines. And it's just as good, if not better. So, but I don't think you're going to destroy France very, very quickly, David.
I must tell you, very, I watched a movie the other night, and I don't often watch movies nowadays, but it is called A Taste of Things.
Oh, yeah.
And it takes you back to 1890, and it's nothing more than the relationship between a gourmand, which I've G-O-R-M-A-N-D,
yes,
and his cook, or his, he, you know, try to marry his partner, which is Juliette Binoche. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Binoche.
And they cook. The whole program is nothing about them making meals for their friends, you know, and it's all around that. But it's a most incredible movie. But what it's designed to do, I think, is to challenge what is today food, which was nothing more than fast foods. And they go into complete detail, even though there's a story around it. They're long scenes of preparing a meal. You know, I mean, it's quite incredible. But that's the French.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying to you? That typifies what they stand for and how they spend hours just cooking a meal, you know, and savoring it and drinking wine with it. And you can't replicate that.
No,
you can't replicate that.
No, China will never have that kind of – China has its own culture. France has its own culture, and they're both very, very relevant. But you'll never replace luxury goods in France.
I give you is this, like, French cuisine used to be like the preeminent cuisine in the world, right?
Yeah.
But you look at like globally, I think Italian probably is more popular globally.
I think so. Yeah.
So that's what happens. It's like, yes, the French are still like the certain kind of cuisine. But if you're looking at, like, you know, I think, David, you have eaten more Italian food than French food in the last year.
Listen, These are 5-6 courses of enormous meals, you know. You can't believe it. But I think what they were trying to illustrate was, you know, pretty much that culture that you're talking about. You know, this was what they stood for. It wasn't a, you know, you don't go into a quick service restaurant, you know, get a plastic bag and go out and eat it, something. So I think it's all around what the French stand for and their, as you called it, their cash, you know, the cachet, whatever. Anyway.
Okay, you stick with the French brands, if you would. And there's also, talking about films.
I'm a toasted cheese and chips man, you know.
you wouldn't know it to look at you, but anyway, we accept your explanation. There's another French film which has been released because of the Olympics. It's called Amélie, which is set in Montmartre. It was re-released this week, and it's getting a lot of favour again for people that haven't seen it. It's absolutely brilliant. Very coquettish, the girl in it, and rather attractive. Okay, we've gone off at a tangent. As we always do.
Lindsay, I have to mention one thing that's been flashing in my screen.
Go on, then.
Talk about markets.
Yes.
Just to illustrate, whoever, as we started to talk, NVIDIA was going down, and it went down over 5 or 6%.
Yeah.
And more. Another. I thought, oh boy, here we are again. In the time that we've been talking, it has recovered that and is now trading up. So it started up, went down 5 or 6%, and has now recovered all of that, and is up about just under 0.5%.
Very good.
All within a few minutes. You know, so I'm saying, try to live through this and try to understand what's driving these things. Rotation? I don't know. I have no idea. You know, what is behind the kind of movements that we are seeing?
It's thin conditions, and it's also algorithms, and it's also people saying, well, this NVIDIA is not going anywhere. It's still a dominant player in its particular field. And as you can see, the S&P has suddenly turned around as well because of NVIDIA. 54.80 now, up. Okay, it's only up slightly, around about 0.2%, but it's done well. David, I'll quickly stay with you on this one. The South African market, anything you've seen there? Because we've been talking very much overseas stuff. What have you seen?
I tell you what worries me is that commodities are down. And I think it's a subject we can talk a little bit more about, because I think I'm concerned about commodity prices that have been coming down. You know, copper is now below 9,000. I'll repeat this again. It was 11,000 when BHP made the bid for Anglo.
Yeah.
And that was the big attraction. And I'm concerned that there's, you know, of the weakness, I think a lot of it is Chinese associated with slower demand from China. But also, you've got your PMIs falling. You know, most of them were in negative, I think, other than the UK. And I'm concerned that this market is not showing the turnaround that we expect. And wherever I look again today, even gold was down below 2,400 net. And I think this is weighing on our market. You know, our commodity index now is down 2.5%, which has held back some gains that we've seen in other areas of the market. But, you know, the way it's performing is quite worrying, even though you've got analysts talking this side of the market up. I'm looking at the longer consequences of that, you know, on a lot of, certainly on the South African economy, and also, you know, what it reflects in terms of growth.
Speaking of growth, Viv, US GDP surprise to the upside, 2.8% rise quarter two, which is gratifying, I think, even though everyone's still worried about recession. You know, Ford going down 10-12%, whatever it is, car sales down, home sales awful. But the GDP number, pretty good, Viv.
Look, I mean, the US economy has definitely been much stronger than anyone anticipated. If you had looked, you know, a couple of years ago, and you'd said, okay, the next 2 years, what would be the chance of a recession coming through? And it was pretty strong. I mean, especially if people were thinking about rate hikes coming through, they were thinking about, you know, pullbacks and so on. We haven't had the rate cuts coming through, but we had the rate hikes before that coming through, and they were like supposed to bring the market lower, but it's just been, you know, pumping ahead. It's been quite dramatic. And I do think that, you know, the US jobs market has shown slight weakness recently, but if you're looking at a GDP number like this year, I don't see how you would argue that the job numbers are anything but a blip. They would have to be, you know, quite a big jump up in productivity to have such nice GDP growth coming through while the job market's weakening. So I do think this is an interesting number. And, you know, if we don't see inflation coming down a little bit, it's going to be difficult for the Fed to be, you know, cutting interest rates in an environment where inflation is still, you know, 1% above where they want it to be. And growth is, you know, well above, trend lines historically.
Yes, it's a good number. There's mixed numbers coming out at the moment, but if GDP is 2.8% higher, better than expected, and probably better than most G7 countries, and this is the biggest G7 country, of course, then that's a good thing. Let's have a look at some numbers now, some other numbers. The dollar rand is 18.33, which is off its lows, the rand, that is. British pound against the rand is 23.62. Euro rand is 19.91, as all of those prices shows a rand that has recovered somewhat, but still looking a little bit shaky. Euro dollar is 108.65, which is a euro which is up very slightly. Gold price, David, you mentioned it. Goodness me, it was close to 2,500 10 days ago. It's now 2,367, down $46 in the last 24 hours, or nearly 2%. Platinum is down 11 to 948. And palladium down $27 an ounce to 902. They were both above 1,000, I think, 2 weeks ago, but now not at all. What else is going on? We need to see what's happening with oil, because that is a barometer for the world economy. And it's down 0.25%. Brent crude is $81.49 and West Texas $77.60, which is unchanged. You spoke about copper, David. In US dollar terms, it's actually up 0.33%, $4.12 per pound. You were talking about it in dollars per ton on the London Metal Exchange. But it stabilized. But yeah, again, that was, as we said on Monday when we spoke, that was $5 a pound not long ago, and has fallen nearly 20% since then, which is big.
Yeah.
Maybe Billiton are happy they didn't get the weren't successful with their 49.
Anglos must be in trouble. I mean, you know, their numbers came out today, but down 23% earnings. That was slightly better at the top end of the market, but there are worries, you know. There's concerns about that. That's, you know, when we particularly refer to the South African market. I mean, this is a big underpin for us, mining. Even though Anglos have got most of their mines outside, you know, whatever is left here, especially the platinum sector, I think is a big concern. And you saw the platinum prices now. You know, I don't know where palladium is. I saw 920, platinum 930. Now, these are not the kind of levels that are going to create a lot of employment. So, anyway.
Okay.
David, just a question. On the Anglo thing, the interesting thing was the big write-down was on fertilizer.
Yes. They've just bought it. This is new.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. This was a new purchase.
I thought they were getting rid of their non-core assets. So why have they bought fertilizer, for goodness sake?
What's it called? Woodsmith or Woods?
Another $1.6 billion write-down,
That's ridiculous. Well,
honestly, that's why I'm saying my next life, Lindsay, which I hope comes around soon, I'm going to be a mining magnate. I'm going to be the CEO of a big listed company. I want to just have massive amounts of money just to do what I want to do.
To fritter away.
To fritter. If I boob, I'll just do those journal entries. Sorry.
Right. Yeah, I mean, look at these impairments and write-downs. I mean, what's an impairment? What's a write-down? I don't know. And look at South 32, the impairments on its nickel assets, for example. I don't understand that. What does that mean? What does an investor say when he says, okay, well, we've impaired this particular asset? I don't know what it means, David. You're an accountant. Like, one day you'll explain it to me.
What it means is that what they paid for, they're not going to get back, and therefore they write it down to a level on which they can get a reasonable return. So the levels at which it's standing in their books is far too high relative to the kind of money that they're earning. But they dare not do that because people are going to start to question them. So it's saying, hold on a sec, you know, you paid a massive amount for this asset and this is all you're earning. So what they do is they say, okay, we'll write it down so that our IRRs fit in line now, and we as CEOs can now make big money, because we can't make big money if we're not meeting our IRRs, you know, our returns. So they just write it down. That's easy. It's called a journal entry. This is cash once expended. So they get away with it.
why don't I like the corporate world? Incidentally, let's get to some other indicators now, because the S&P is almost 5,500 again. The S&P futures for September, that is. When we started speaking, it was down, and now it's up nearly 0.5%, 5,496. And it's all to do with what you referenced earlier, David. The NVIDIA performance, US 10-year bond, 4.23%. The South African 10-year, we haven't really spoken as much about South Africa, 9.68%. And what else have we got here? Bitcoin. I see that Trump is talking at a Bitcoin conference tonight. And he was the one that said it's not money, it's not real, you can't quantify it, all those sort of things. And now he's the champion of cryptocurrencies. It's a very funny man, this one. I love him.
No, but that's one reason he's getting money. Like Andreessen Horowitz, you know, Mark Andreessen, the guy that created Netscape back in the day, he runs a company with this guy, Ben Horowitz. They call A16Z. It's one of the biggest, you know, investors out there in Silicon Valley. And they are huge into crypto. And they just changed to be Trump supporters a couple of weeks ago. And the crypto money out there is really backing Trump. And I think that's one of the reasons he's doing it, is because someone told him, hey, you back crypto, and you're going to get all these little, not little, but all these investors just putting money into your account, knowing that if you come in, you change the laws, make Bitcoin, trading easier, we'll see it in 100,000 Bitcoin price. It's worth spending a few tens of millions on you. And that, I think, is happening here.
Okay, well, it's got a while to go, but it's just below 65,000, down 2% on the day, 64,765, 2.2% weaker. David, we've got to look at the JSE today, and I haven't focused on Stock Exchange News Service announcements, but maybe you could. But I see, before you get into that, British American Tobacco, top of the list, up 5.4% today. But were there any news items? You mentioned Anglo's.
I think Anglo's has been my main focus, particularly after the numbers that we saw out of Kumba and Anglo Platts, which were expected. Both of those were down. I think the big worry is where to from now. Where do they position themselves now? And particularly with copper coming down to these kind of levels, the market price was up slightly, but I think most of the bad news is probably discounted. But I don't think it's going to be a quick turnaround. This is not, in other words, even if we are scraping along the bottom and dragging sideways, I don't know if the turnaround is going to be all that great until or unless we get China coming to the party and also massive reductions in interest rates, and growth being stimulated. So. You haven't spoken about politics. How can you not allow Viv to air his views?
Okay, let's talk about politics. Kamala Harris has got energy. When she walks down the steps of an aeroplane, she looks like a normal human being. When Joe Biden does, he looks like, I don't know, do you remember the Thunderbirds? Do you remember the Thunderbirds series from the 1960s? Like. He looks like one of the Thunderbirds exactly. Coming down. That's what I always think of. They should make a Joe Biden Thunderbird. But Viv, over to you on this one. Kamala Harris has got energy, and she's re-energizing certain sectors of the U.S. population, and I applaud it. She may not be experienced on the world stage, and she may lack a little bit of knowledge in certain areas, but goodness me, if she surrounds herself with enough people to delegate responsibility, smarter people than she is, she could be a great standard bearer for the U.S. and its population and its economy and on the world stage. Viv, am I talking out of turn?
No, look, you won't be shocked. Go back and watch speeches by George W. Bush, which at the time everybody called one of the dumbest people ever. You know what I mean? Yeah. Just watch George W. Bush speak and then compare it to the debate between Trump and Biden. And do not tell me that he was out beating these guys by at least 20 IQ points. George W. Bush, which you overcall. Listen to Reagan's speech, okay? For those of the older, if you remember, Reagan was considered to be a very lightweight president, very dumb. Reagan sounds like, you know, a Rhodes Scholar compared to these guys. You don't have to be special to be. I mean, David was saying he wishes he comes back as a CEO of a multinational. I wish I came back as a politician versus the kind of guys running for, like, you know, head of the different countries at the moment. Because quite frankly, you don't have to be. You have to be able to complete a sentence, walk up and down some stairs. Right? And you look spectacular. Look, she's raised a lot of money. Right now, there is a bump coming for her. That being said, I do think that it's going to be very difficult for her to win. I would still put it probably well in Trump's favor, because it doesn't matter how many votes you get in California or in New York and whatnot. Those don't count, quite frankly. It counts only in, there's only about six or seven states that do count. And in those six or seven states, I think she's still lagging Trump by one percentage point and so on. And because of the way the math works out, he can win like a couple and she can win the rest and he will still win. So he's leading in these areas that I'm saying. So he's ahead in all these places and he only has to win a couple and she has to win virtually all of them to win. And I think it's still likely that he's going to win. But with Biden, it was looking like he was going to win the election and win the popular vote. I think with her, he might win the election and she might win the popular vote, kind of return to the normality of the Republican-Democrat kind of thing. It's probably still going to be a loss, but it's going to be a loss by a more honorable loss than with Biden. Biden was going to be doing so badly. This is what I think was more important. Biden was doing so badly that he was not just going to lose the election, but he was going to hurt people below him, like in Congress and in Senate races and so on. I think she might not be the same. So you might just have a case where you have like a Republican president, but one of either the Congress or the Senate might still remain might still go to the Democrats. So it won't be a trifecta, which is, I think, the real danger here. With a trifecta, he can do some crazy stuff. With a mix, he can't.
He outdid himself last night, Trump, that is, David, and you and I share sentiments when it comes to Trump and Elon Musk, by the way, who's done a U-turn on Trump, by the way. He said he was going to give him $45 billion, and he had an interview, and he said, no, actually, I never said that, which is a lie. And talking about lies, Trump said last night, he said, did you see Kamala Harris, as he calls her? Did you see her first rally? And there was a lot of noise and a lot of enthusiasm, but there was only about 1,000 people there. Lie number one. Lie number two, he said, at my rally, when I was shot, there were 55,000 people. No, there weren't 55,000 people there. There was 15,000 maximum, probably less than that as well. So why do it? If I could be a speechwriter for the Democrats, oh my goodness me, I'd go hog wild, as they say in America. I could go berserk with these things and I would undermine him so beautifully. But David, do you agree with Viv that Trump has still got the edge, despite the fact the first poll that came out showed Harris 2 points ahead?
Well, you know, it's the Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, it's those states that are going to count. So I like her. I like what she's done in a very limited time. What has been interesting is that she's capturing the imagination of young people.
Yes.
You know, and that they're getting excited that they finally have a woman to vote for, woman of color to vote for, and someone younger. And I think that's been the big story. You know, we've got someone younger that we can relate to instead of these two old geriatrics having a go at each other. As you say, the one, you know, a Thunderbird. That's a wonderful description. Does Viv remember? Because they were puppets.
Yeah. I do remember those days. Thunderbirds ago.
I just hope she can keep the momentum going, and that something can come of it. But I'm just praying that something goes in her favor and that we don't have Trump, because I'm not sure I'm going to last 4 years of Trump. You know.
The one thing I think is the one game changer here is that he's come out and I think he has agreed to debates. I think that was the danger that he was going to be saying, I don't want to debate you because I'm so far ahead. But I think that he's agreeing to debates at the moment. And I think that is the thing here that's interesting. And I think that might be something that turns around. But don't forget, Trump has this way of talking about, like, and it's obviously, like, you know, lies. But he has he's kind of perfected a way of doing these things that it doesn't really affect him. He's right. He can go shoot somebody in the middle of the street and there'll be a way out for him. Yeah.
No, he doesn't. It's exactly that. He's just so thick skinned. That's why I'm saying he could never get shot.
There was a great line from Seinfeld. You're familiar with Seinfeld, David. I don't know if you are, Aviv, as well, where George Costanza, who's been is portrayed as a spineless liar throughout the whole series, and a very lovable character nonetheless, and he was trying to coach Jerry Seinfeld on how to get through a polygraph test. He was Jerry was trying to go out with a police officer, and she said, well, you go on a polygraph and then maybe I'll go out with you. Anyway, the point is that Jerry said, I've got access to the most duplicitous mind in New York City. And he says, teach me, George, how to beat the polygraph. And he says to him, Jerry, just remember this. It's only a lie if you don't believe it. And that is Trump. It's exactly the same. He says these things, and I genuinely think he believes them. I don't know. Maybe I'm underestimating him.
He does. I mean, the problem is that he makes up the stuff, and a day or two later, everybody says it's a lie. You know? But his audience lap it up, even though they know he's lying. You know, they don't care.
It's extraordinary. Anyway, back to the JSE. British American Tobacco, 5.4% higher. Vodacom up 3.4%. Their numbers came out yesterday, I think it was. Standard Bank, nearly 3% to the good. Another bank also doing well. First Rand, up 2.5%. On the downside, Harmony, 7.3% weaker. Because of the gold price, obviously, Anglo Gold Ashanti, not quite as bad, but still bad, nearly 5% down. Goldfields down 4.7%, and Hammerson, the property company, 4.25% weaker. Anything else you saw, David?
Not out of the usual there. I've been watching Karoo.
That's all over the place,
I never know whether it's a good or bad company. People talk about it. Its results seem to be good. But, I mean, I've never seen such volatility like this in my life. What I'm looking for is that if you go outside of the big caps, there's always massive movements, which always, today, for example, Novus, which came out of Naspers, is up 14%. You know, Murray and Roberts, 7%. So we're seeing a lot of trade, Lindsay, down below in very small and medium caps. There's not much trade in these stocks, but there's plenty of movement in both directions. You know, suddenly a Tredidor for whatever it is. It's all worth of $160 million, down 11%. South Ocean down 9%. You know, so massive volatility down, right down at the bottom. But you can't really get into those stocks. There's not enough volume to really get involved in that side of the market. Value traded, Lindsay, was when we started speaking as well, just before, was about 11 billion. And I'm just looking at the closing volumes were about 18 billion. So 7 billion of the trade takes place in those last 10 minutes, which is nearly 50%. Yeah.
Okay. And the closing indices, if you would?
Yeah, well, the All Share ended up 10 points, or 0.10, sorry, at 80.678. A lot of pressure on the resources. The resource index down 2.5%. That's a resource 10. The broader one down 2%. And then, as you were mentioning, those banks up 2%. So that's where the gains came. Industrials up 0.25%, kind of flat, with consumers under a bit of pressure. But it's that side of the market that's concerning me, which is the mining one.
Okay, we shall expand upon that next week. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. Great fun, as always. Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss and David Shapiro from Sasserin Securities, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.